Hello, and welcome to Fresh Growth, a podcast by the Western SARE program. That's Sustainable Agriculture Research and Education. I'm your host, Stacey Clary. Just for background, Western SARE is funded by the U.S. Department of Agriculture's Natural Institute of Food and Agriculture. The mission is to promote sustainable farming and ranching across the American West through research, education, and communication efforts like this podcast. Fresh Growth will introduce producers and agricultural professionals from around the West who are embracing new ways of farming and ranching. They're going to tell us about their experiences adopting more sustainable agriculture practices and the challenges and benefits they have seen. Today's guest is Kurt Millimacki. He's Manager VP of Helmack Farms. Kurt is a third-generation farmer in Stanford, Montana. The farm grows a variety of crops, mainly winter wheat. He and his wife operate a cow-calf operation on rangeland leased from the family farm operation. Kurt, welcome, and thanks for sitting down with us.
Thanks for having me.
So please tell folks where we are and what it's like here.
We're in Stanford, Montana, which is in the central part of Montana. We're at 4,200 feet elevation. We get 12 to 14 inches of precip a year. We get pretty cold in the winter and pretty mild in the summer, really. Especially this year, it's been really cool and wet. We have loamy sort of soils with a lot of gravel underneath them for the most part, and some soils that have quite a bit of clay in them. So it varies. We're in the Judith Basin is where we're located, and you can see seven different smaller mountain ranges right here from the yard, and it's a good place to be, I guess.
Good place to be, yeah. With your family and working out here. Yeah, it's absolutely beautiful out here.
Thanks. Yeah, this is a good time to be here. Everything's nice and green this time of year, so it can get pretty dry. We've had several years where it's rain shuts off about this time of year, and then we have to wait till Labor Day or something like that to get rain again. So, but we don't get overly hot compared to some parts of the state, but we get a fair amount of wind here, and that helps dry things out too. So.
Right. Thanks. And so your family's been farming here for a long time. Can you tell us a little bit of that history and, you know, what was your involvement here on the farm as you were growing up?
Well, my grandparents started this place in the late 30s, so we've been here for about 80 years. And then my dad took over after my grandpa passed away, and then I've been here for about 15 years. My time growing up here, my parents were divorced, so I grew up in town mostly, so I didn't have a typical farm ranch childhood with chores and stuff like that at the farm. So I would come out, didn't start helping out until I maybe got maybe to be 10, 11, 12 and started doing a lot of mowing and weed eating and cleaning bins and things like that. And then when I got to be about 13, then I started driving truck out just in the fields, and then my older brother would drive the trucks from the field to the bin site. And then about that time, I started driving the swather for our haying operation. And then when I was 14, I started driving the combine, and I've been in that ever since. Been the main driver of that piece of equipment. And then I guess it's just kind of progressed from there. So mostly just summertime help, though, growing up.
Helping out in the summers. Mm-hmm. And I saw you have two young children. Are they helping you out this summer?
They do, yeah. This is birthday season for them. So they're just 11 and 9, but my son has a birthday next week. So though they're pretty much 12 and 9, but they help somewhat. He's starting to do a lot of mowing, which is beneficial because it's this time of year. It seems like that's a full-time job. It grows back
right.
and we have a fairly good size yard and a couple other old bin sites and homesteads that we like to mow, but they haven't been mowed yet, and they almost need a piece of haying equipment to do it instead of a mower. But he has helped out doing that and taking care of some Bum calves and things like that, but mm-hmm. they're pretty active. They just got done with their baseball season, and so that between that and different sports camps and other camps, it seems like they're pretty busy too. But, right. but they do help.
They help out. Great. So, did you plan on staying on the farm or returning to the farm, or what were your plans when you got out of high school?
So my dad had brought it up one time towards the end of my senior year of high school, but I hadn't really thought too much of it the whole time I was growing up. But when I went to college, I didn't really know what direction I wanted to go into. I was thinking of going into political science and working in D.C. was one idea I had, but that never really came to. I ended up just going for one semester of college and then came back here, and I've been here ever since. I guess a little over 15 years now, and it's been good, but I would have probably not, I don't know that I or my dad or anybody would have guessed that 20 years ago that I'd have been here
right.
doing this, I guess. So,
but, right.
But it's been good, and I guess it was all kind of new to me, whereas some people that grew up maybe on their family farm and ranch and work there around the whole year, maybe they don't want to come back to mm-hmm. their, you know, some obviously do, but some maybe don't want to come back because they have been there and felt like that's all they've done is work there. So a lot of it was new to me. Like when I first came back, we, you know, it was like December, and then that next spring we were seeding. Well, anytime Dad had been seeding in the fall and the spring, we were always in school, and so I rarely had ever been around when we'd done that. So that was all kind of new stuff to me.
Right.
It was new and challenging. But and even when I first came back, I didn't know that I would be here that long. Mm-hmm. Didn't know whether it was a temporary thing or a full time thing. But I guess now we know. I guess
mm-hmm. so. Yeah. So you came back and you had a learning curve.
Oh yeah, there was a learning curve with some of the stuff that I hadn't helped with before that was already done by the time I came out in the summertime. Mm-hmm. So,
and what prompted you to stay for the 20 years so far?
I guess I don't know exactly what prompted me to stay. I mean, we started to. You know, Dad and I worked well together, and then I had never grown up around cows at all. When my mm-hmm. grandpa passed away, my dad sold the cows, and then he had a few back. The market was at a low there in 03, and he had bought a few, and so that first one I came back, that's how I got paid. I got a cow or so a month, and so then I had those, and then by the time my wife and I were high school sweethearts, so then we got engaged when we were like 20, and then by 21 I was married, and so then it was just a matter of, you know, doing a job for a while,
right.
and that's just kind of all it was. I guess there's a difference between a job and a career that you are passionate about, which I guess now I'm at that point, but I wouldn't say at first, you know, it was just kind of a job and just helping out Dad, and so it's progressed into something more now. But then we had our kids by the time we were, you know, 23, 24, and mm-hmm. so then it was just, you know, making sure they were taken care of, and then I guess it's just kind of progressed from there.
Right, growing into more of a career for
right,
you and
right.
more of a passion. So maybe can you tell us a little bit more the details of your operation, you know, your acreage, what crops are you growing, and then the cow-calf operation?
Okay, so my wife and I run the cow-calf operation, and we own the cows, but we lease all the pasture and rangeland from the family farm corporation, which is called Helmack. And so, and we've steadily built that. Like I said, I wasn't around growing up, and we've just kind of grown, and now we have around 200 head. And then we farmed about 4,000 acres when I first came back, and the entire place between deeded and lease ground, pasture, hay ground, farm ground is about 10,000 total acres that we manage here, and then we farm about 5 to 6,000 acres, and we grow. When I first came back, we grew winter wheat and spring wheat and barley, and that was about it. And now we grow winter wheat for grain and for forage, spring wheat, winter canola, spring canola, barley, oats, chickpeas, flax, yellow peas. So we've really grown the diversity of crops that we do. Plus we do the cover crops, which are usually 10 to 12 species on their own. And so that's I guess, you know, the basic run of the operation as it stands today.
Okay. And can you tell us, you know, why you started adding more diversity to your crops and adding the cover crops? What prompted you to make those changes?
So we started making some changes on our cow-calf operation about 2011 or 12, I can't remember which. We had a number of during calving. We used to calve in February and March, and now we calve in May and June. We're kind of wrapping up right now. And when we used to calve in February that one year, we hit 30 below weather like four different times for 4 day stretches. And my younger brother was here at the time, and my dad and I, and we only had maybe a little, like maybe 150 head at the time. And I said, well, I don't know, like I knew my younger brother wasn't going to be here more than another couple of weeks after after calving got done. And I said, well, if dad gets older and wants to retire, I don't think I can be out there, because you're out there 24/7 and that. And I said, I don't know if I can or I want to do that, or we were going to have to look at building an additional barn if we were going to grow our numbers. And I thought, well, maybe we should just switch to calving in a time where we don't need a barn, mm-hmm. and don't need that amount of labor. So we had so that was the direction we started going, and we had already started some different grazing management practices. And so we started with those changes first on the cow end. And then I went to Dave Pratt's Ranching for Profit School, and then when I was there, they break up into different groups, and there was a guy in my group from South Dakota, and he had asked me if I had heard of this guy named Gabe Brown, and I said no. And then I watched YouTube videos, and he was talking about using cover crops, and so I guess that was kind of what first got us into using cover crops. We had already been doing some cover crop plots with the local NRCS, but we didn't really know how they would factor into mm-hmm. to our operation. And so between listening to Gabe and then Jay Fuhrer, and then kind of implementing the five soil health principles into our operation, and that's when we started to make a lot of these changes with the, you know, one of the principles is diversity. And so we looked at what we were growing, and we were only growing cool season grasses, and that was it. And we had a lot of there's a lot of fallow area in our area where nothing grows on that land for that particular year, and so we wanted to eliminate that. We didn't do a lot of it, but we had done some, and so we wanted to eliminate that. And so that's kind of first where the acres that we would normally have fallow, that's where we would put the cover crops.
Okay.
And so that's where we started to get into the cover crops and add in the diversity.
Okay. And it seems like you're pretty committed to farming sustainably, and you've explained a lot of that to us with your cover crops and the five principles about soil health. I did see a video once where you mentioned intellectual curiosity. How does that play into as you start thinking about sustainability and in your operation, and just maybe some changes you might continue to make?
Well, as far as that, I think the main thing with this is we want to farm more sustainably, but right now, like on the farming end, there's still a lot that we do that isn't sustainable, and you have to have intellectual curiosity to keep working to get better and researching of what you can improve upon. And I think that's just something that's maybe always been in our family. My grandpa, when he started this, he only had a seventh grade education, so he had to continue to learn throughout his entire life. And so I think maybe that's just kind of gone through the generations. Mm-hmm. And so we're always trying to learn about whatever it is, but in the farming end, it's just kind of researching new ways to do stuff and trying to get better every year.
Right.
I'm sorry, what was the other part that you had asked there?
Oh, just, well, I guess a follow-up question too would be like, have you seen, from what you've learned and you've implemented some of the changes, have you seen a positive impact? And you said there's some areas where maybe you have some improvement towards sustainability, but have you felt like you've made some steps so far?
Oh yeah, we've definitely, you know, made some steps, but a lot of these different practices are, and why some people don't do them is the average age of a farmer is in their 60s, and if you only have 3 to 5 years maybe left to farm, you're not going to do stuff that you're maybe going to see 10 to 15 years down the road. But we've seen some improvements right away just by going to, we thought we were no-till before, but once we got rid of our hoe air drill and got a disc drill, we see a big difference in disturbance there, and we try to keep the soil covered, so we're seeing our soil temps stay cooler when it's hot, and we're starting to see more earthworm populations coming up, and a diversity of wildlife that we attract, and different insects that we see, and then the soil just seems to look better, and so those things have. Like this spring, we had a lot of snow last winter, and then we get these Chinook winds here where the it warms up to the, you know, into the 50s, and the wind blows 50 miles an hour, and it melts all the snow, and then it runs down to all our fields, and we had some fields where our soil didn't move, but our neighbors did, and then we caught their soil in our fields, and so it makes you feel good, I guess, when everybody's soil's moving and yours isn't.
Yeah, great. It must feel great.
Yeah, so.
And, you're doing something right.
Right, and I mean, it's supposed to storm today, and they're talking about these downpours, you know, coming really fast, and that'll do a lot of damage to bare soils. And we have one field that is more bare than we like, and, you know, I'm worried about that field if we get a storm like that, but most of our other ones have so much cover on them that it would, they'd be well protected from an event like that. And we also have to keep it for the wind that we get later in the fall and, mm-hmm. and winter time. And it can be open here. Sometimes we can have 2 feet of snow on the ground, and sometimes we don't have any. And so like last January, right before we had a record cold February, but January was like 50 degrees the whole month, and it was nice, but then it was super cold the rest of the winter.
So. Right. So that's great. And you're seeing some positive impacts. Wildlife diversity, the earthworms, you know, the soil not running. What about bottom line? I mean, it's great to make these changes, and it's great for the soil. How do you feel like, is it impacting in any way, you know, just like the profitability of your operation?
So on the cattle end is where we really have seen a big change in that. So just going through what we've changed there, we used to calve February and March, now we're May, June. We graze our cattle in a high stock density, short duration grazing. So this time of year we move our cattle every morning with a temporary electric fence, so they're in a new paddock every day. So our cows, the top third of the plant is the most nutritious, so they're always on a high plane of nutrition, and so we move them. We get better utilization of the grass. A lot of people say, you know, take half, leave half. Well, if you put your cows in a pasture and they don't touch some plants, and some plants they take down to the ground, I mean, you could average that out and say they took half and leave half. But ours look like you mowed them with a swather, because they just eat everything evenly. And so they do better that way. And then we give long rest periods, so we get stockpiled grass for wintertime grazing. And so a lot of our neighbors have been feeding. On a normal year, they feed about 4,000 pounds of hay per cow, but this last couple winters have been so brutal that they're probably pushing 6,000, and this last year especially, and we were like 1,400. And so we're saving a lot of money that way, mm-hmm. and so that's benefiting to us there. So we're not spending a bunch of time out there in the winter, calving them out, and then we don't feed much hay. We're able to graze through the winter for the most part, and we graze cover crops in the winter also. Mm-hmm. And so we've been making a good profit that way.
So, you know, you're part of a group, a lot of the next generation farmers, you know, those of you who are the next generation of your family joining an operation that's been built up and it was very successful by one generation, it's being transitioned to a new generation. And as you're making some of these changes that we've talked about, how do you respect the work that came before you and manage the business for today's challenges?
Okay. Well, it is a, you know, kind of a tough situation to be in, but you have to kind of look at what the things that we learn about this. We're learning a lot about soil health right now. Things that we thought were good practices before, now we kind of see that they weren't as good of practices, like tillage. That used to be thought of as a good practice for the soil, and so it's not like the previous generation thought that they were doing it, you know, something bad for the soil and just did it anyway. So you have to kind of respect that they were trying to do the best job they could with the knowledge that they had, and then that's just what, you know, I feel like I'm doing on our end. It's just that it kind of goes against the thinking that was in the minds of, you know, my dad and my grandpa for, you know, decades, that is kind of the opposite of what we're doing now is in regards to tillage and no-till. But you have to kind of respect that, you know, what they were doing and how hard they were working. I know they, you know, I don't have to work as hard as my grandpa did to do the same, you know, same things. And so, but they did the best they could, and that's all we're trying to do, is do the best job we can for the soil and keep it going. But I think that farms and ranches in this country are going to have to change what we're doing, or we're going to go out of business. As you can't continue to do the same thing and hope to stick around. Some of these changes are going to have to come about, I think. So
Right. Some important changes. And as you talk to others in your community, or they see what you're doing, are they generally receptive to new ideas?
As far as, you know, the neighbors, they don't, I haven't had a whole lot of conversations. I've had, you know, there's definitely some interest, because when I'm around neighbors, they do ask, you know, what we're doing and why we're doing it, but I don't know what they say when I'm not around. But I know they are interested in what we're doing, but there's a few others in our area that are doing, there's about one of us in each of our neighboring communities that are doing things similar to what we're doing, and so that's it's nice to feed off of them, at least in our area. But there'll be people that'll get into it if what we're doing is right, and I believe it is. I think there'll be people that'll mm-hmm. get into it at a later time, and they'll have the easiest transition, because they'll be able to see what the guys that did it first, you know, there's a learning curve and trying to figure out what works and what doesn't in our area. But those guys that transition later will have it easier, because they can just kind of go, well, I can see that this worked for him and this didn't, and I don't have a problem, I guess, you know, telling people what we've learned, and so that they don't make the same mistakes. It doesn't really make much sense for everybody to make the same mistakes. And when there's other guys in your area doing it, then you can kind of learn from mistakes that they make, if they make different ones than you, so that we can all kind of learn together, I guess.
Right. No, that's important, just to have a learning community, and that's great you're willing to share your knowledge and your experience to others that started after you.
Right.
And what advice would you have for any grower, but, you know, specifically young growers who want to start farming sustainably and farm successfully at the same time?
Well, I think, you know, you've got to, if you think you want to change but you're not sure of it, you know, you need to probably try and transition, you know, part of your place and see how that works before you jump into it. If it's, sometimes that can be hard on a multi-generational farm. If the older generation doesn't want to change but the younger one does, well, if you can talk the older generation into letting you try some of your new ideas, or if you're doing some tillage, if you want to go to no-till, if you can start by doing some of your place and see if you can see those benefits. Some of the benefits of the things we're doing show up right away in the first year, and some of them have been slower to come. And so it's just, but we knew that going in, that some of these changes were going to take a lot longer than we'd want to. Everybody wants results and changes to happen right away anymore. But we knew it was going to take a while for some of these things to come about. And so I think you just have to be willing to go out. And there's a lot of peer pressure with farmers to, as far as doing something different than the neighboring farms, and kind of a mentality of if doing it that way was right, everybody would be doing it. But I think you have to be willing to just kind of put yourself out there and see if it works. But you know, as far as being sustainable, there's a lot of what we do in farm and ranch in this country is not sustainable, and we need to make some changes to make it more sustainable or closer to a sustainable lifestyle.
Right. So it seems like you're advising patience, some risk taking, some creativity. Those are some attributes people need to keep in mind, especially if in your community or other communities, it does need to start transitioning to more sustainability.
Yeah, it definitely does, and being lower costs. I mean, there's a lot of kind of pessimism in ag right now with lower commodity markets and things like that, but it may make us better producers or businessmen in the long term if we can survive through these times when it's lower markets. We ought to be better coming out of it if we can lower our costs of operations.
Right. That's good thoughts and some good advice. Well, Kurt, I really thank you for taking the time today. I think you shared a lot of good experience, some good knowledge, and just some motivation for going out and trying new things and hoping it works and learning from what works and what doesn't. So thanks again for talking with us.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you for listening to Fresh Growth. We hope you enjoyed this episode. For more information on Western Serre grants and our learning resources, visit westernserre.org.